We meet for 10.
Sorry, Linda.
We meet for 10 weeks every spring and every fall. This is our 9th session in our 10-week round. And our fall series is entitled Inspiring Hope and Change, Making a Difference Now. And we all thought this is a co-created series, and we all just felt the need to hear from people who are making changes and people who have hopeful news for us, because it's been quite a time, and that has really been fulfilled. We've heard so much hope and people who are making a difference. So please turn all your cell phones off or to vibrate any way that microwaves and doorbells or whatever is near you that can make a sound, just so we can be together, our own oasis here for a couple of hours. And we prefer that you stay muted while our speakers are talking, just because if someone has you on speaker view and you are not muted and you cough, you will jump into view and they will disappear. So if you would stay muted, unless you're sharing or asking a question. We attempt to present programs that are thoughtful and original and provocative. And any ways that we have our discussions, we really ask that we all practice listening with open minds and open hearts to each other. And if we fall short of this, let us know. These are also fraught times with lots of ways to disagree. So every week we meet for reflections at 10 o'clock in the morning. You're welcome to come. Anybody is. And we reflect on the week before. What did it make us think about? What did we learn? What might we do differently as a result? Who have we told about the things we heard? And then we have a little break. And then from 11:30 to 12, we have a welcome. And then we have a focuser. And that's somebody who's volunteered to tell the story of their own personal relationship to this topic. What did it make them think about? What does it make them feel? And what are they willing to share about that? That kind of helps us enter the topic in that personal way. And then we, at noon, our main speaker comes on board and does their presentation from noon to one. And at 1 o'clock, we open it up to a group discussion. And it's really fun when it becomes a discussion, people offering different things that have sparked off of the two presentations. So our topic today is Reflections of a Street Doctor, which is sort of based on one person, but this one person has affected the lives of an incredible number of people. And so Dr. Jim O'Connell will be our speaker soon. I found his book by accident a couple of years ago, Stories from the Shadows, and it just kind of jumped off the bookshelf at me in a store, how books do sometimes, and I was so impressed by him. So I'm really looking forward to his talk. And to get us going is Mary Rose Moody. Is it Moody or Muti?
It's Muti, but we say Muti, but it's Muti because in Italian there's no long U.
Okay.
Say it however you wish.
All known as Mary Rose.
Yes.
So Mary Rose asked to be introduced as a retired nurse. I have a feeling she was an awesome nurse from stories I've heard, who has been with Women Explore for about 9 years, and she will introduce you to the rest. So welcome, Mary Rose.
Thank you, Linza, and everybody. Good morning to all the people I know, most of you. If there's anybody new, welcome. I want to start with the title of the series again, Inspiring Hope and Change, Making a Difference Now. And that's how we, I think all of us, went to find our speakers. And it was, there were a lot of people to choose from who were fabulous. And I guess just because I was a nurse for 45 years, in Boston and in the hinterlands where I live now. But I went to school at Mass General, graduated in 67, and it was a 3-year program, which I don't know if you people understand there were many, many three-year programs then. They were not collegiate programs. That was just coming into, or coming more into, the way to educate nurses. But I went to school to Mass General, and it was a fabulous program, and we had great instructors, and we certainly, in a world-class hospital, had great experiences and exposure to all kinds of people. It certainly, I'm sure, including homeless people. In the Bullfinch building, which was built in 1811, you could walk right out the door onto the lawn, and there were patients who would escape occasionally and run back to the North End in their johnnies, and we'd have to go and collect them. But anyway, so my story includes caring for people in healthcare for a long time, but not necessarily homeless people. I wish I could say I did more of that. But when I was getting out of school, I heard about, what does that mean? I have a screen that's...
I have it too. Everything on your will be recorded.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but I don't know how to get out.
I got it. Hang on. Green. It's Christine Green. Oh, she's sharing. She's sharing her screen. She needs to stop sharing.
Who is sharing?
Christine Green.
My friend, Chris. Should we click on anything, Miriam?
No, here, I think I can do it. I'm going to try.
Okay.
Can Christine hear us?
I don't know. She hasn't said anything. Stop sharing. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Got it. Sorry.
Thank you.
That's a new wrinkle.
Yeah.
So back to, you know, when I was getting, I think I was either still in school or very newly out of school, I heard about Bridge Over Troubled Water, and they had a van, which I'm sure they still do, because I know they're still in existence and have grown greatly, I'm sure. But I was a very young nurse and heard about it and volunteered with some of my friends, and we got on the van and drove to Cambridge Common or Boston Common. And it was aimed at youth, probably mostly runaways, who to try and extend healthcare to them, bring them sandwiches. But they could come on and, you know, if they had a complaint, they could get checked out, you know, sore throat, a cough or anything like that. And if they were ready to talk more, I'm sure they could talk. The doctor who was with me, I know, was a pediatrician, not a psychiatrist or anything, but I know they grew to do a lot more of that too, and try and help kids that left bad situations and ended up sleeping on Cambridge Common. Some of them, I'm sure, had drug issues at the time, but I didn't do that for a really long time. But I certainly recall it, and glad to hear from Erica that her partner still works for Bridge Over Troubled Water. So within a year of graduation, I decided I wanted to do something else. And I heard about a program, a Jesuit volunteer program, and the orientation was at Boston College. So I went in the winter and heard about what they were doing, sending volunteers like the Peace Corps, but probably not quite as organized or as big. I had thought of the Peace Corps and thought, oh my goodness, 2 years when you're 21 or two sounds like the, you know, end of time. So there was not so much of a time commitment with this program. So anyway, I ended up going to Jamaica in August of 68 and lived in a house with five other young women. Another one was a nurse that I had known for years. I went to high school and nursing school with her, and two were teachers, and one was a secretarial person who was going to work in a business school. So we were in Kingston, and I went to a clinic every day in one of the poorest sections of Kingston. And next door to where our clinic was this gigantic school, probably had 1,000 kids, no walls that went up to the ceiling. So you can imagine the noise level in a school like that, and all the little kids in their uniforms. But many of them didn't have shoes, so a lot of them came to the clinic with cuts on their feet, and there were, you know, hookworm disease, and that we had medicine for, but much of it was giving out vitamins or just talking to people, taking blood pressures on adults, a lot of terrible hypertension there. But I found over the months that I was there that I was not really well equipped to deal with these diseases that were so much involved with poverty and malnutrition. And, you know, I just didn't have the tools. I was a very young nurse and I was not used to that kind of a setting, but we did our best. And we went to the country in Jamaica one weekend to, I think we were building a new school or some kind of a building, and the nurses went along and had a little clinic. And one young man came in and he had his hand all wrapped up in a cloth. And when we took it off, his thumb wasn't there. He brought it with him, but it was not attached anymore. And we kind of panicked at that, I'm sure, because I knew you could reattach things like that in a hospital setting or the right hospital. But we just packed him up and somebody had a car and took him to the hospital. And I don't know the end of the story, but it was just such shocking things that you wouldn't see somewhere else. We also went to deliver a baby in the middle of a terrible rainstorm and tromping through the mud to this little hut where this woman lived, and baby had already delivered itself. But we delivered the placenta and she was very happy we were there and named the baby after us. And it was just incredible. Some of the experiences that we had in Jamaica were just amazing. And I met people on, everyone I knew was from a pretty white middle class, you know, not normal family, normal, whatever that means. And here I met people who were the poorest of the poor, and I met very wealthy people too who were, you know, involved with giving money to charity and of course the church. I was working under the umbrella of the church because it was a Jesuit program. So I met all these priests and people who taught in their schools. It was just an incredibly diverse experience in so many ways. And unfortunately, our time came to an end around January 1st of that year because our house was broken into and we were terrorized and I got a machete across my nose. Sorry if I told this story before, but that was a kind of a traumatic experience. And the five of us left. The Archbishop didn't want to be responsible for us anymore. So we came home and I went back to Mass General again. And let's see, what else can I tell you about my life as a nurse? So many things. I mean, I had always wanted to be a nurse. I never really wanted anything else. And I felt like it was a calling in so many ways, like teaching is a calling, like psychology is a calling. The spiritual life of many people, of the good people in our churches, that's such a calling too. And you just were able to reach out, not just taking care of people, some of whom were not terrible. In my last 28 years as a nurse, I worked in a hospital where they did a lot of outpatient procedures. And you think, oh, one arthroscopy is just like the next one, but it's just not true because everyone's an individual and how they're affected by their surgery or their level of anxiety or just there's so many things that enter into it. So even though they're all having the same procedure, they don't respond the same way. And there's huge amounts of teaching pre-op and post-op in families. When you have kids, you have to teach the parents and there is a lot of teaching involved. And one group I think of often when we were on call, we often had lots of miscarriages, people needing a D&C because they had a miscarriage. And some of them were just devastated because they'd been trying to have a baby for a long time and they kept miscarrying, or they just were so invested in wanting to have a child. They didn't all respond the same way. Some, as I say, some were much, much calmer and it had happened before or it hadn't, but I don't think people understood that one in three pregnancies ends in miscarriage. So it's very common. Everyone doesn't have to have a surgery, but one of our GYN doctors had a wonderful sheet that we would give to people that talked about the grief involved, that, you know, this isn't something you just, you know, people say, oh, don't worry, you'll get pregnant again. You know, the silly things that people say when they're faced with things. But this helped us a lot to advise people, you know, you may want a support group, you may want to connect with other people who've been through this and talk. And it was just a great way to help some of these women who were just so devastated. That was one group, but also families. I remember families when I was at the general. I can remember certain patients and their families would be there every day. And, you know, it would become apparent that the person was going to die. And just supporting those families was so important. You have to consider that part of the care that you're giving. And I know there were nurses who really weren't happy with having families around. As the years went by and more families were in the room with you when they could be, there were nurses who really, I think, didn't like that at all. They felt, I don't know, they felt threatened in some way, but it's just part of the care. You have to be involved with families and support them and talk to them and explain and, you know, and deal with their tears and sadness too. So anyway, back to, I think enough about my career as a nurse, but I just wanted to talk about a little bit about all the other people who've inspired me. And these people could have all been part of our series if we could have, you know, if we could have gotten them. And Penny mentioned earlier, Paul, she mentioned Partners in Health, and I'm not sure if it's the same Partners in Health as the one I'm familiar with, which is Paul Farmer's group that was started 30 plus years ago now. I mean, I never heard about people in Maine supporting him, so I'm not sure. It could very well be the same group because they started out in Haiti. He was at Duke when he first started going to Haiti. He was a college student. And it was nuns in wherever, in Duke, in North Carolina. There were nuns who were going to Haiti to do work, and he somehow got hooked up with them and started going, and he's been going to Haiti ever since, and he's now in his 50s. But he believes healthcare is a right for everyone. And as I said, started in Haiti, from there to Peru, and now they're in 11 countries all around the world. And they're just an amazing group. And it's not so much like the Peace Corps. They train people in the countries to do the work that need, I mean, they bring in people in the beginning and try to, like they've started nursing schools and get people. For instance, in Haiti, they have people who live there going around checking up on people. Are you taking your medicine? Are you, you know what I mean? Checking them up. If they have tuberculosis, they want to know, are you doing all the things we've taught you to do so that they don't have to come back to the clinic all the time or whatever. If you're interested and you don't know, Tracy Kidder is the author of this book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, that he wrote about Paul Farmer's work a few years back. And that was when I first heard about him and read the book. And he just became my hero for some time. And I do support the group financially. Another person who's an inspiration for me is a friend. Her name is Sister Pat Ginty, and she was in Jamaica too, but not when I was, but we got hooked up and we've been friends now for a very long time. And she worked with homeless women in Manhattan, a very small shelter, about 18 beds, and catered more to older women, who were homeless and, you know, and they did the usual. They had so many beds, but they fed more people when they could. And they did healthcare for them, helped them to get like Social Security if they had worked for many years. So a lot of it became social work. And Pat, who had originally been a nurse, went back to Fordham to get a social work degree because she just noticed that most of what she was doing was more social work than healthcare. So she's a real inspiration to me, and she's coming this weekend to visit for my daughter's birthday. Another friend, Barbara Kroll Roy, who's been on she's been listening to some of our talks. She started a nonprofit to honor her daughter Eve, who died at age 30. And Barbara and her ex-husband started a group to support the indigenous people, mostly in the Southwest, mostly Navajo. And a lot about safety is part of their mission, like helmets for kids who ride bikes, baby seats for infants that are born that need to go home in a seat. And they do a lot of teaching about safety. There are unfortunately a number of paralyzed people who've been in terrible car accidents because, you know, it just happened. So they try and prevent that. And her husband was a neurosurgeon. So that's how that focus came about. They also have been giving scholarships. They just gave a couple recently. So trying very hard to support the indigenous people. And as you know, I'm sure, huge numbers of COVID patients in the Navajo Nation and probably other around the country. But that's their focus has been mostly with the Navajo people. She's an inspiration to me too. And I'm sure to everyone who knows about her work. And then Brian Stevenson, I have to mention too, he's another inspiration for me that I, you know, learned about him a few years back and read his book, Just Mercy, heard him speak at Boston College. And he works, as you know, with prisoners, many on death row, many wrongfully convicted, trying to, you know, stay their execution. And he's just another hero that I would love to hear him talk to our group. But some of these people I feel are almost beyond, although we should always try, I guess. And the last person I just thought of this morning, talking to Marianne, Yo-Yo Ma, I just think he's an incredibly inspiring person who he's done concerts all through even before the pandemic, I think, just with the horrible stuff that was going on in our country with divisiveness. I think he just tried to be a bright light. And I don't know if you saw, but when he went to get his shot in Pittsfield, his COVID shot, he brought his cello. And he came in, and while he sat there for his 15 minutes, he played the cello for people. And I don't even know if everybody in Pittsfield knows who he is, but he has a house out there. So anyway, I just think he's a beautiful, inspiring person too. A peace and love kind of guy. So I just, because of the title, that's why I wanted to talk about all these people that, and I'm sure you have a list too of people that you find totally inspiring, that we'd love to hear talk to us, but at least we can read about them and see them in the news or wherever. And that's how I came. I have to go back to our speaker who's coming, I hope, real soon. I saw a movie about him. It was on, I told you about this movie. The Antidote was made in 2020, and it was all stories of kindness of different types all over the country. About immigration and all kinds of things, but there was a piece about Dr. O'Connell in that and showed him, you know, they followed him around with cameras and saw his work. And then I got the book to Linza and just thought he'd be a wonderful person to listen to. So enough. And thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Mary Rose. This is our applause. Do you need to go and check on Dr. O'Connell and see if there's...
Is he not here?
I don't see him on the screen.
Okay.
So I don't know if you need to do that, because normally we would open it up to questions to you until noon.
Right. But I don't... The thing is, he has I think she's a secretary and assistant, and she had all the information about signing on. And right. I don't know if I have a phone number, and I checked my emails early.
And I know he did register, so he can get he got the link.
Oh, okay. Then hopefully he's just late. Let me just look. I don't think I have a phone number. heavens.
Well, let's hang out for a few minutes and give you some comments and questions, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. I'm just going back to her emails. Yeah, she said he'd like to share slides, photos. She talked about how long he would talk. Oh, I do have a number. Hang on.
Okay. Is there anything that somebody wants to share while we're waiting for even Mary Rose to come back about what this makes them think about?
I will. What it makes me think about is my daughter who did some mission work in Haiti, and they put up a clinic in a can. Or that's what they called it. It was a mobile clinic in an area. And, you know, it just, I was a little bit terrified when she went because, you know, of some of the things that she, but to hear Mary Rose say she had a machete in her face, you know, really hits home for me. My daughter came home with the chikungunya virus and her joints were all swollen up, but she didn't have a machete in her face. But the, but one of the things that she had said was the people there had so little, but they were so joyful and grateful. And I think what a great experience for her to see that as a young kid, you know, with the U.S. privilege. And I just wanted to congratulate her, you know, kudos to Mary Rose as a young person for going and doing that. I think it's admirable.
Yeah. We got some, oh, okay. Any other comments that people want to share? Mary Rose, you need to mute. Maybe Marianne can mute you. Any other comments that people want to share from listening?
So you know, Dr. O'Connell is on.
He's here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I see him. Okay, there you are. They didn't jump you at the end of the line, so I didn't see you. Welcome.
Oh, just getting ready. Nice to see everyone.
Yeah, we're just getting ready to introduce you.